This episode was recorded in June 2020. If you enjoy this podcast, then subscribe to catch all future episodes.
We're starting now. Have you had a shave?
Absolutely. Yesterday.
But for people who didn't realise, we had some technical difficulties yesterday. It was probably your beard that was getting in the way of the Wi-Fi.
It probably was. You're absolutely right. But I've been told to tidy it up by you, so here we are.
To be fair, I had a shave about 2 days ago, but I cut myself to bits. I went sort of like just a bit out of practice. Like anyway, how are you?
Good. I mean, it's boring, isn't it? Gee whiz. I can't wait for football to start, I got to be honest. But we just got to do what we got to do and just hope everything goes well.
Have you had a full house? Has the family been hunkering down with you?
Yeah, well, that's probably the huge plus of this lockdown. It's been the fact that everybody's been around us, Rob. The family have been here, getting under each other's feet at times. But it's been good and being able to sit down and talk, because you don't get those opportunities in normal life, I suppose. So that's the big plus about it. The second one, the downside of it is they're all in their 20s and they all want to be out. So obviously they're frustrated, but they realise the situation.
No, the same feeling here. I've got three here chomping at the bit, going mad. Some good days, some bad days. But no, it's been great. It's been great to have them around, to be honest with you.
Yeah, absolutely. But, obviously if we just take it in small stages and I think there's things opening up on Monday a bit more and then just gradually do it, and hopefully the health is the most important thing and we start getting out a bit more, that'd be good.
Okay, let's talk about you. We'll talk about your career in a bit, but you've been a Manchester United ambassador for a long while now. Tell us a little bit about that, and also the Manchester United Foundation, what you've been doing.
Right. So I obviously had the honour of playing for Manchester United for 12 years. Went and played for Wolves for a couple of years after that. But when I finished, they asked me to become, to work for the club. And then a few years later, to become an ambassador. So I'm actually really privileged. I've got an ideal job, Rob. As you know, I travel an awful lot, particularly across in Asia. Do a lot of work across there for Manchester United, hosting events, putting big screens on so our fans can get we put a live game on and we can bring fans in and they can watch a game with one or two ex-players, and the atmosphere across there is fantastic. So that's a big plus. Love doing that. It's an ideal job. And I was a trustee of Manchester United Foundation for the best part of 7 or 8 years. I still do a lot of work with them. Listen, a lot of charity work that football clubs do go unnoticed, go unheralded in the community. And I think in this, the last 2 or 3 months, obviously, with what's happening around the world, the Manchester United Foundation have been absolutely fantastic, giving so much money to food banks and local schools. And we have to raise £1 million for UNICEF every 3 years anyway. So it obviously takes a lot to raise money. We had a massive game against Bayern Munich last year, 20 years of remembering the treble, which raised well over £1 million, which has been ploughed into the local schools, local food banks. So great to be part of that. And that was a real eye-opener for me. So it's I'm really honoured to be still involved with Manchester United.
When you travel, is it just as an individual? Is it with other people? Or do you actually sort of go on club trips? If they're going on pre-season tours or things like that, do you have to get involved in that?
Well, all three. I mean, I go pre-season tours wherever they go, which is fantastic. It really is. It's a bit of an eye-opener. It's completely different to our pre-season tours, Rob. I got to say that.
Why? In what way?
They're a lot more professional. The training they do with these bands is completely different to what we did. I mean, when we did pre-season, we didn't see a football for 10, 14 days. They're straight into it. It's a lot better. They do kind of disguise running, you know, whereas pretend that they're dribbling and all that, but they do a lot of that. And just to be around them, and when we, particularly in Asia, when we go across there, the fans are fantastic. They really are. And we sell out wherever we go, whether it's America, Australia, you know, Southeast Asia, Europe. It's been great to see. So I do that. I do events on my own where I go across and meet some sponsors. And I do events with Robbo and Yorkie and Coley and Wes Brown and player, ex-players like that, where we go across and do host events. So it's great to be involved, because when you do finish playing football, Rob, I think it's the banter and the camaraderie that you miss most, the dressing room. So it's still great to see a lot of ex-players around.
You were in it at the hub of it in the dressing room or on tours yourself for so long at Manchester United. As a journalist, when I covered a lot of Manchester United, you always feel out of it. You sort of, you know, you're on the side. What about you as an ex-player when you're travelling? Do you feel out of it, or do the lads go, "Hey, it's Dennis," or whatever? Or are you sort of, "Oh, who's that bloke over there?"
No, it's fine. They're fine. You know, because we get involved with them. We do things with them, events with them. You know, because they have to do one or two things with sponsors. Not much when they're pre-season, to be fair. But you know, we have to do one or two events. And we're always around with them. We go to watch training. We'll hang around with them. So it's really good. Really good. Obviously, the local lads know more about us than I suppose the players coming in. But it's just great to see. It's a huge bandwagon that goes away pre-season, and you're on the plane together and you get to know people. And of course, with Ollie being manager now as well, one of my ex-teammates, it really does feel like a big family. I got to say that. You think it might be slightly detached, but it's a really big family that, you know, come together for, you know, the best part of 2 weeks now pre-season.
Does it ever surprise you that, I've lived abroad and the name of Manchester United, I've done events with your son, Liam's been involved as well, and the fans go mad for it. Do you sort of rock up at places and go, "Oh my God, look, you know, how many people are here?"
Well, I think that, listen, I've travelled the world and the Premier League is so big. It really is. Now, it's always been big in Southeast Asia because they've watched it since the 70s and 80s. And obviously, when you go there, I mean, Liverpool have got a huge support across there. We've got a huge support across there. But the Premier League is massive, much bigger than Liga. India, football is getting so much more popular, especially in the youth. I mean, in our lifetime, cricket will always be number one. But honestly, football is getting bigger across there. And China is another big area of growth. Even America, Rob, which has got its own sports. I mean, it's growing and growing across there. Doesn't it surprise me? I suppose I've done it long enough now to know that it doesn't. But you know, when you go into Jakarta and the passion and the noise that, you know, fans when they're watching games, it's just mind-boggling. It really is. As if it's, you know, they can't ever get to Old Trafford. We put on a game. I've been across there where Man United and Liverpool game has been on, and it's just incredible. The atmosphere, the noise, the passion, the knowledge they've got, it is unbelievable. So yeah, I suppose it does. It does still, I suppose, amaze me. It really does.
Do you bump into Sir Alex on any of these trips?
No, not on the trips. He doesn't travel as much now, but I do see him on home games. I do pop into his office every now and again. Thankfully, he's fine. He's looking good. And he's been under lockdown more than anybody else, I think, in these tough times.
You say Ollie. It's funny. I've written a few names down here. Robson, Keane, Ince, Schmeichel, Bruce, Hughes, Giggs. I could go on and on and on. Does it surprise you in the end that it's Ole Gunnar Solskjaer who ends up as manager of Manchester United?
Absolutely not, Rob. He's a very... Listen, I had six, seven years with Ole. Very studious, very involved in the game. I think it's a well-known fact that, you know, when he was sub, he used to take it all in and try work on defenders' weaknesses when he went on. Not at all. Very highly intelligent man. I think he knows what he wants. So no surprise at all that he went into football. And I got to say, I mean, it was tough taking over Manchester United. He went on an incredible run when he took over. This year is his first year, his first pre-season. I think he signed some great players, particularly Fernandes in a January window. Pre-Christmas, I think we were up and down a little bit. And then we went on a run, 11 games, where we got ourselves really challenging for that European spot. And of course, this coronavirus has come in. So it starts up again. We have to start up again. But I think Ollie will do an amazing job. I really do.
It is in our time. You know, he loses a couple of games. Oh, hang on. I've just gone. What's happened there? Can you see me? There you go, Dennis. I'm back. Sorry. Our time. I mean, you lose a couple of games and, I'll get him out. Ollie, you know, managers have such a short space of time. I think even as an outsider, one, because I know him, not obviously like like you do, but you think he seems like a really lovely fella. I think there's a lot of people hope he does really well and he's given a real proper chance.
Yeah, absolutely. As you said, well, Rob, I mean, they are under so much pressure. There's so much money involved in Premier League that, you know, teams want to be like us, want to be up there and winning titles and certainly being in in the Champions League. Other teams want to hang in there. There's so much money involved in the Premier League that there's so much pressure on managers these days. There really are. It's like a revolving door. But all he knows is the history of the club. He knows what the club's all about. You know, he's tried to bring everybody back in together and be more of a unit, I suppose, as much as possible. And I think we're heading in the right direction. But, I mean, the pressure's incredible. I mean, you go across... I mean, the pressure's incredible in England, but social media as well these days is so, so big that everybody's got a piece to say, haven't they? So you need to be thick-skinned, I suppose, but the amount of pressure managers are under is incredible. It really is.
I mean, we talk about your playing career. I just want, you know, we'd be here until doomsday talking about your playing career. But I was just looking, I mean, I spent a good few hours yesterday, one enjoying Dennis Irwin goals and Dennis Irwin assists. And obviously, it all focuses on 99 eventually in the treble. I just wonder if one of the real keys to that success was Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, in the sense that you had four unbelievable strikers, Coley, Dwight York, Teddy, and Ole was always like the kind of the fourth, but he never moaned. He never kicked up a fuss. Whenever he came on, he made a contribution, not least in the final. I just wonder if that was a key, you know, to the whole success of the season, if you like.
Huge. Rob, honestly, like, we had four strikers and, listen, they're all different than what they did, but they came together. I mean, obviously, Yorkie and Coley were probably the number ones. They formed a great partnership. Teddy was such a clever player. But Ollie was an incredible goal scorer. I think we saw that in his very first game when he joined. I think he scored one against Blackburn. But we used to see that all the time in training. But he was a manager's dream. He really was. And you know, what he did in 99 in scoring in the 93rd minute to win the Champions League, a trophy we were desperate to get, by the way, because, you know, we just won our fifth Premier League. And to be known as a really great side, you need to win that Champions League. But I think what amazed people was when Bex left, he played on the right wing for quite a while. And he knew exactly what centre-forwards needed. And that was to play into the box as quick as possible, which Bex used, obviously, was a genius at. And he was just an incredible player to have around because you knew there was goals in him. The four he scored against Forest when he came on, he was a manager's dream. He really was. And a true gentleman as well. I think I've no doubt he's probably got a bit tougher now, or certainly has to get a bit tougher. But yeah, a dream to play with, great to be around, and a very studious man of the game. So it surprised me absolutely not that, you know, that he went straight into football. And Rob, by the way, my goals wouldn't have been on that long, but I didn't score that many.
I tell you what, they did chuck in a few, by the way, some fantastic, if anyone used to say, get on YouTube and watch Dennis Irwin goals. But also, what I want to talk to you about, you touched on it there with Beckham and Ollie. I was amazed, even for people like Dwight York and Andy Cole, Giggsy on the far post, not the biggest, the number of headed goals you scored for you as right back or left back, at so many times you'd whip the ball in early was the key.
Yeah, I used to always remember Quinny, when Niall Quinn played at Man City, he had a winger, Peter Beagrie. And Quinny said he used to have to make four runs before he knew the ball was coming into the box. And I didn't really understand that. Yeah, centre forwards morning, you know, that's no surprise. But I didn't really understand that till I saw Bex, really. And then Yorkie and Coley and Teddy and all, it used to say, we used to know it was coming in, so you just made a run, simple as that. But I suppose we played in an era, certainly under a manager, that encouraged you to get forward as quick as possible and as often as possible and just stick it in there. I mean, the old-fashioned centre-forwards of the 80s and 90s are no more. You know, but I still think you look at Liverpool and they're sticking off. They're two winger, two full-backs. The amount of crosses they stick in now is brilliant. It's great to see, and it puts teams under pressure. And I felt we did that, and we just had Yorkie and Coley, as you say, and Teddy and Ollie. They all scored numerous headers And that was because the quality of the ball got in, and I suppose how early it was.
You played right back and left back. Which were your you were more comfortable naturally as a right back when you were right footed. But once again, get back to those highlights. You didn't half whip in a few good crosses on the left foot as well.
Yeah, I was definitely more comfortable on my right. I mean, I played all my career up to even my first year at United at right back. Even post United at Wolves, 2 years there, I played right back. So, you know, the vast majority, half of my career was spent at right back. But what helped me at left back, Rob, I had Giggsy in front of me, who had a wand of a left foot. And I think I needed that. I needed a winger out there. I think the modern day game, sometimes where you look at Liverpool and City and the wingers tend to come in a little bit. You know, I might have struggled if I played left back then. But, no, Giggsy helped me out an awful lot. And I knew my left foot was more than decent anyway. I didn't have a problem with it. So it just helped me to slot in there, really.
I know you've probably been asked a million times. I mean, I was looking at that 99 team. If you went through it, so you go Schmeichel, Neville, Stam, probably Ronnie Johnson, you at left back. What a midfield, what a balance when you've got Beckham on the right, Giggs on the left, Keenan, Scholes and York and Cole up front. I mean, that's an absolutely incredible team. And watching the, you know, your progress through that Champions League, particularly some outstanding performances, was that the best United team you played in?
Well, it's a big argument because the 94 team was a physically stronger, I'd say, with Ince and Keeney in the midfield and Eric and Mark Hughes up front and Pally and Brucey. You know, Parks was a really good right back and Andrick and Chelsea.
That was a powerful team, wasn't it? Schmeichel and goal.
Oh, it was a physical team, the 94 team. I think I showed you the difference, how even within 5 years the game had moved on, because you needed huge physicality back in the early 90s. You did, when the Premier League started, and the likes of Wimbledon and, you know, teams like that, Stoke and Palace were around, and you needed to physically fight with them, and then hopefully your football come out on top. In 99, it moved on a bit. I mean, there were still teams that battled away. The Boltons made it really difficult for you. But I think you needed, the game was going quicker, smoother. And yeah, listen, the 99 team, you've gone through it. I mean, we were missing our two best players in the final in Scholesy and Keeney.
Yeah.
I just think we had more attacking avenues in 99. We had more players who could score goals. You look at the four centre forwards, they could all score goals. Giggs, you'd get 10 a year for you. Scholesy would definitely get 10 a year for you. Becks, 10 a year, you know, and one or two chucked in from Yap and Ronnie. So we were more kind of, like, Eric was such an important player for us in 94. A lot of our great player went through him. Whereas in 5 years later, in 99, I just felt we had more attacking avenues and we were a bigger threat going forward. And obviously, the size of the squad had grown, the manager had added to it. And we had some great players that used to come in. And I don't want to labour super subs like Ollie and Teddy, but we, you know, Butty and Jesper Blomqvist was very underrated. Henning Berg was a fantastic defender. Wes Brown was just coming through there. Maisie, who we all remember in the cup final, celebrating everywhere. You know, we Butty and Phil Neve, you know, we had great backup. We really did. And I think that was the difference. That's the difference between 99 and 94, the squad.
In 94, in that dressing room, could you get a word in edgeways? There were some big characters, weren't there? Never mind physical. There were some guys who liked a word.
There were some big, bad characters in there. I tell you what, training was a joy to be in. Sometimes we used to play English for the rest of the world, and I tell you what, it was fantastic. It was, Rob, kicking two lumps out of each other. Brilliant. Absolutely.
Who used to win that one, Den? Who won that one, Den?
The rest of the world, of course. Listen, the man, you always need, it's a long, hard season. The Premier League is still the most physical league in the world, I'm telling you now. And you're going to train, what, 280, 300 of those days, whatever. You need a bit of fun in there. And sometimes the fun can be in little five-a-sides. We used to have five-a-side where we'd have a Manx group, you know, with Butty and the two Nevs, a Celtic group, an English group, and a rest of the world group. And we used to have, like, listen, they were ultra-competitive, as you can imagine. But I tell you what, we used to have so much fun. We really did. But you need that. You need, it's such, because you're going to have, through a season, you're going to have times where it doesn't go according to plan. And you need great characters in the dressing room. And And the likes of Maisie and Giggsy and Butty were fantastic, I got to say that.
Okay, I'll run through a few. Best goal you scored?
Best goal probably against... I mean, everybody remembers the Liverpool free kick, but the one I actually saw it the other day against Wimbledon in an FA Cup. It was a goal of the day on the Manchester.
That's my favourite, and that's a brilliant goal.
Brilliant goal, yeah. No, it's just different to what everything else I did because I've scored free kicks and shots from outside the box, but that one was definitely different.
How did you end up as the penalty taker?
Well, when I came, Brucey took penalties and he was amazing. And then Eric, who was even better than Brucey. So Eric left in 97 and we signed Teddy Sheringham. And he missed his first three penalties, including a penalty down at White Hart Lane where he just went back. And the manager just turned to me and says, "You're taking penalties from now on." Simple as, Rob.
Had you done it before?
Not loads. When Eric was suspended, I took an important penalty against Southampton, and I used to take penalties in the old shootouts, but not too many times before.
What was your method? What did you think?
Well, the easiest thing is put the ball down. Pick a side and put your foot through it and hit it as hard as possible. Obviously, certainly in the last 20 years, you know, so many games on TV now that goalkeepers can work out if you have got one huge favourite side. So I think you got to be able to change the way you go now because obviously you'd love to go one side. You look at Shearer. I mean, you know he's going to go to his left, keeper's right.
Yes.
It's going to be powerful. It's going to be maybe up higher a little bit.
Yeah.
I mean, he was an incredible penalty taker, Shearer. But I mean, I'm sure at times he would have to change as well. But that would be his most favoured place to put it, his most comfortable with.
Most difficult opponent?
Stoichkov, definitely. Johnny Barnes was a great player at Liverpool. You know, before he moved into the centre park when he had his Achilles injury, John Barnes was an incredible player. And the ones that cause you trouble are the players, the wingers, that are really intelligent, that can dribble, but also can play football. You used to get a lot of wingers in the past, Rob, that used to just want to go down the wing and cross a ball, and you kind of work them out a little bit. They are quick, they're super quick, but, you know, you got to be able to read it. But the ones that cause you problems are the wingers that are really intelligent. So the likes of Johnny Barnes, Hadji was a tough ass to mark, the Romanian, but Stoichkov was the top Bulgarian player I've seen. Gave me nightmares at Barcelona a couple of times. Left-footed, played on the right wing, which is very much in vogue at the moment. And the one thing about him, Rob, that was different to other wingers, he had a temper. He'd kick you back. Because in our day, you could kick somebody and see how they're going to handle it a little bit. He'd kick you back, so he knew you were in for a tough night either way. But he was a really top player. Here's Stoichkov.
He also had Romario as his sidekick. I was there that night when Barcelona absolutely smashed you. But bearing in mind you had Cantona and Schmeichel sat in the stands. Remember they used the old foreigner rule. But Stoichkov and Romario that night were unplayable, weren't they?
Yeah, listen, I don't care if Big Pete or Eric were on that pitch that night. They wouldn't have made any difference. We got beat 4-0, Rob, as you know. You were there. It could have been double figures. They were so good. And the amazing thing, a couple of things about that, Romario had just been across to the festival in Rio. So God knows what he was on. But he was incredible. Pally said he was incredible that night. So tough to mark. And yeah, the foreigner rule, Jordi Cruyff actually played for Barcelona that night. But the foreign rule, it was like three, but there was also one, and I can't remember the name of it, but if you were foreign and you'd been across in England at 16, which was very rare in those days, and you were allowed one of them. So it included me, and because Giggsy was Welsh, it included Giggsy. So the manager used to pick between me and Giggsy for games like that. I used to get the tough away games. Where he used to get the nice games at home. So unfortunately, I was there at Barcelona that night in the Camp Nou where we got hammered 4-0. But Stoichkov was a tough ask. It really was.
Best place you played, favourite stadium, apart from Old Trafford, favourite stadium you played?
The Bernabeu would take some beating. Just soak right top of you. Listen, Camp Nou is huge, really is. It's a big, massive ball, but the Bernabeu is right on top of you, and it's just a great place to play, it really is.
How did you keep so fit? You didn't miss many, did you?
No, I grew up playing two Irish sports, hurling and Gaelic football, which I think toughens anybody up. I was lucky with injuries. I just had one bad medial ligament injury that kept me out for the best part of 2 months. But besides that, I was lucky with my ankles and knees. I still don't have a problem now, Rob, and I still run and try to keep fit. So, yeah, a bit of luck. And listen, you got to look after yourself as well when you play. I mean, players... They keep saying, would George Best play in this era? Of course he would. Would Brian Robson play in this era? Of course he would. Even though there was a bit more going out and enjoying yourself, they'd be as fit. Brian Robson was as fit as anybody. Would be still the fittest player now. So you got to keep yourself fit and you got to look after yourself. You really do. It's not easy for a young lad coming into the team, whether it was back in my day or whether it's now, 18, 19, you're earning a bit of money, you know. You want to go out and enjoy yourself. We did. They can't now. So it's a totally different ball game. But the main thing is, Rob, you got to look after yourself. You've got a real short career. It can span from anything from 8, 10 to 15, 16 years if you're lucky. You got to look after yourself. And then in those years, look after what you eat and when you go out and things like that. And it'll help you last. It'll give you a bit of longevity.
Have you got a Fergie story for us that sticks in the mind? I mean, obviously it must be absolutely millions. Is the one that is personal or dear to you?
He was brilliant to me. And I keep saying this to this. And as a manager, all he ever wanted you to do was try your very best. Give it everything. Not just when you're playing for Manchester United as well, obviously training, but you're part of Manchester United. You know, look after yourself when you're not in the training ground and things like that, and dedicate yourself to football because you're well paid for it. And as long as you did that with him, you were fine, honestly. And you learn from your mistakes, particularly in a football field. You were fine. And the amount of players there, if you look at it, you got one club players and Giggsy and Nev and Scholesy, but there was a lot of players that have stayed 10, 12 years. You know, Keane, Robbo, Brian McClare, Pally, you know, they're all there 10 years or so. So it's a great club to play for. You have to go with him. You have to drive with him. You know what I'm saying? You have to keep improving. Stories, there's too many to mention. I mean, Albert Morgan, now our kit man, was on MUTV recently, and he came out with some, because he would be the manager's ear. I mean, he'd know everything. Albert's the go-between and all that.
Yeah.
Listen, I tell you, I mean, so the manager used to play for Rangers. Right, apparently, because I tell you what, when you look at his physique and all that, when he used to join in the boxes and everything, you couldn't believe he was a player. Obviously, he used his elbows an awful lot when he played. But we had one of them boxes, a little key ball, like 10v2 or two in the middle, and the manager was in the middle once. And Roy just joined, and whatever happened, the ball hit the manager in the face, and really like bang right in the face, and everybody was quiet, and Roy started laughing, and the manager came around and gave him an absolute stare. I was like, welcome to Old Trafford, Roy. It was brilliant. but he was brilliant. I mean, when Roy first signed, our first pre-season was down in South Africa in 93 with Roy. And I wasn't supposed to go because we played with Ireland for a long time, but we signed Roy, and the manager brought us down just to be involved and get him to know the group and all that. And they were doing Formula One testing down there. And Eddie Jordan, the old Jordan group, he sent a couple of bottles of champagne up to our room. And about 5 days into the trip, we didn't drink champagne, Roy and myself. About 5-6 days into the trip, the manager knocked on the door and he was coming in to see if everything was settled, and saw the two bottles of champagne, had a look, and then at least they weren't open, Rob, though. That's the only thing. They weren't open. So, but you'd imagine if they were open there halfway, imagine what you would have said. But You know what? He was brilliant, the manager. He had great character. Away from football, obviously, he comes across as a steely manager, steely jock. But he was good. He was really good.
Hey, Dennis, listen, it's an absolute... It's lovely to talk to you, as always. When the lockdown finishes, I'm sure we'll get together and we'll nip up to the Stamford Arms and have
absolutely.
A beer. Really look forward to seeing you. Love to Jackie. Love to you all. And thanks for joining us, Den. Really appreciate it.
Great catching up here, Rob. Good to see you.